Good morning, everybody. Happy summer. It's hard to believe it's already July, but it's here. So I'd like to call the TJPA Board of Directors meeting of July 10th, 2025 to order. Jeff G., the board chair. This board meeting is being held in person at San Francisco City Hall. Members of the public may attend the meeting in person, watch on SF Cable Channel 78, 28, or 99, depending on your provider, or visit sfgovtv's website to stream the meeting live. Madam Secretary, could you please call the roll?
Yes, thank you, Chair G. And prior to calling roll, I'll note for the record that Director El Tawansi was recently appointed as the new director of Caltrans and therefore will no longer serve on our board. However, we're fortunate that her alternate, Director Ambule, was appointed acting district director and will continue to serve on our board. However, he is absent today due to a scheduling conflict. Additionally, Directors Galley and Forbes are absent due to scheduling conflicts with that. Director Andruschak?
Present.
Andruschak, present. Director Kirschbaum?
Present.
Kirschbaum, present. Director Lavery?
Present.
Lavery, present. Vice Chair Mandelman?
Present.
Mandelman, present. And Chair G?
Present.
G, present as well. Directors, we have a quorum. Shall I call your next item?
Please.
All right. Directors, item three is communications, and we'd like to note the process for members of the public to make public comment. Members of the public may comment on the meeting during public comment periods. In person or remotely, the call-in line is provided as a courtesy, and its availability may be disrupted due to technical difficulties or otherwise. In-person public comment will be taken first, followed by remote public comment. The public comment call and info is printed on the agenda and should be displayed on SFGov TV. I'd also like to announce that the board will not meet in August. An official notice will be distributed and posted on the TJPA website shortly after this meeting. And our next scheduled meeting is September 11th. With that, are there any other communications?
Let's continue.
All right, directors. Item four is board of directors new and or old business. I'm not aware of any. All right, directors. Item five is the executive director's report.
Good morning, directors. I want to second the board secretary's congratulations to Dean El Tawansi as her appointment as the new Caltrans director. She was sworn in July 1st, and we've appreciated all the time she's committed to the TJPA board and appreciate her support and Director Ambule's continued participation on the board. I also want to formally welcome Henry Karnilowitz to the team as he joined us as the newest member of the Citizens Advisory Committee on Tuesday. At the Transit Center, I'd like to invite you all to join us in our rooftop park for a couple of our most popular summer programs upcoming, the first being the return of Circus Bella, a week from Sunday, July 20th in the rooftop park, and the second is the agency's 7th anniversary party, Rooftop Rhythms. You'll hear a little bit more from Director Walsh on August 16th. At the end of last month, TJPA joined Director Kirschbaum and many industry experts at the American Public Transportation Association, or APTA, conference at the Marriott Marquis for a two-day high-speed rail seminar and then their annual rail conference, which brought close to 2,000 attendees to San Francisco. BART and MTA were co-hosts of that event, and we hosted three tours and served on two panels between those two events. We had some portal pens made for the occasion, which are in front of you here today. It was a great opportunity to showcase our transit center and our planning for the portal while learning best practices from Spain, Italy, France, Japan, the United Kingdom, and many of our domestic partners working on station area development, preparation for future high-speed rail service, shifting train schedules to hybrid work patterns, and other efforts relevant to our work. A couple of themes that resonated with me personally for the upcoming work on the portal included timely completion of enabling works that can really drive down your costs. The sooner we can secure permits and right-of-way, complete utility relocation, interagency agreements, and design, the more certainty we can give the eventual contractor and the more confidence we can have in our cost estimate and schedule. Also, developing key performance indicators that align our vision, incentivize collaboration, and facilitate delivery success without over-specifying requirements or focusing on unproven innovation. One of the quotes of that particular panel was, "Nobody wants the green banana. You don't want to be the leading edge of innovation if there's a tried-and-true proven technology out there that can meet your needs." Third was to focus on the passenger experience and where they want to go. For high-speed rail to succeed and attract private capital, many panelists pointed to the need to get to the population centers in the Bay Area and the LA Basin, which we, of course, hope to facilitate bringing into the Salesforce Transit Center basement. Another was not to fall victim to what the Transport for London presenter called the doom and gloom merchants. that 50% of the world lives in cities today, and that is projected to increase to 70% by 2050. So we need to keep focused on the final deliverable and work backward to design with a focus on systems integration throughout progression. And then also to leverage adjacent real estate. Of course, this agency was very successful in that regard in phase one. And study after study shows that parcels with fixed and reliable transit service sell for a 5 to 20% premium over those without that amenity. More and more transit agencies have recognized this and created joint development divisions that generate affordable housing and increased ridership at their stations, but also produce annual revenue streams for transit service that in some cases exceed 3 times total fare box recovery. So a very significant source of operating funds. Regarding the portal, we're working to incorporate these and many other lessons learned from our many conversations as we continue to advance durable technical work for the portal. Starting today, you'll hear a more detailed project update from our portal project director, Alfonso Rodriguez, as a standing agenda item, no longer as part of my ED report on the regular calendar. Alfonso will walk you through some good news on our cost estimate and our latest achievements, but I'm excited to announce the advancement of the very early risks we heard so much about at the APTA conference. First, the team has commenced preparatory tasks for our right-of-way program by providing early notification of subsurface easement requests of property owners along the project alignment. This will lead to an action first at the Port Commission and then at the Board of Supervisors next summer. And we're also advancing the first tranche of real estate acquisitions this fall-winter and are working to complete the design for utility relocation along Townsend Street, where we hope to begin work in early 2027. Finally, we're working on the request for proposals for the heavy civil tunneling contractor and advancing conversations to complete the remaining interagency agreements by the end of 2026. In terms of funding, we're working with the Federal Rail Administration to administer the $24.6 million CRISI award that was announced late last year and hope to have that executed in time for our October board meeting. At the state level, the governor and legislature passed the state budget last week and included intent language to restore the $1.1 billion commitment for transit operations and up to $750 million in emergency loans to Bay Area transit agencies to address short-term fiscal challenges. We are also hearing that the legislature is working on a trailer bill to reauthorize cap and trade, now retitled Cap and Invest, to 2045, and is working to have a framework in place for legislative consideration this August. The TJPA board, represented by Chair G and Vice Chair Mandelman with District 6 Supervisor Matt Dorsey, jointly signed a letter advocating for reauthorization of cap and trade to continue funding for the portal. We also understand that Mayor Lurie is drafting a similar letter that speaks to his administration's priorities with cap and trade, including advocacy for the portal, as well as transit operations and affordable housing. Finally, we're continuing to work with our NorCal High-Speed Rail Association joint benefit counterparts to secure cap and trade funding for our collective projects to prepare the Bay Area for high-speed rail's arrival. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions before we ask Ari, our facility director, to present the facility operations update.
Adam, thank you. Directors, any questions? Thank you, Adam.
Great. All right. Ari?
Ari Walsh, our facility director.
Good morning, Chair G and directors. Ari Walsh, TJPA facility director. Happy to be here with you on this beautiful morning. So let's kick it off with our June programming highlights. So you'll see the awesome swing performance we had called Swing in the Sky on the left with over 100 participants. And then changing it up a little bit for Pride, we had a bluegrass celebration with over 1,000 people coming out to jam and enjoy the sun. Upcoming events, as Director Vandewater had mentioned, we've got Hoopla by Circus Bella coming on July 20th, so in a little over a week. Get there early, bring your blanket, and get a spot in the amphitheater. That's always a great show. Also, as Director Vandewater mentioned, we've got our 7th anniversary party occurring on August 16th. It's going to be free and open to the public. It's going to be park-wide, and there'll be cover bands from the 70s, 80s, and 90s allowing you to jam out in your favorite Saved by the Bell outfit. Now moving on to less fun things, but still very important. Just giving you a little taste of the things that we do to keep the asset in good working order. Some things that we finished last fiscal year are semi-annual fire alarm and sprinkler testing, annual fire extinguisher services, annual testing and certification of our police and fire radio systems, and our annual elevator safety inspections. We also did backflow plumbing and kitchen exhaust cleanings and services. What we're targeting for this year is updates to our physical and digital wayfinding infrastructure, implementation of the new of a new lease and work order system, helping us track our leases better and come up with just more rapid information, and repairs to public art, which is also something that's easy to fund, but a little bit more difficult to maintain. So got to keep all that stuff in good working order. And then to help save the environment, we're going to be upgrading some of our lighting to LED and doing some checks on our irrigation system to make sure we're not losing any water in an inappropriate way. And with our tenant updates, so Bear Bottle is still working on their kiosk in the Grand Hall. It is still expected to be complete by the end of summer this year. And they're also going to be adding a pergola to their park location. Both projects have seen a few minor delays, but we do expect them to be done in the next few months. Also, just want to mention the rooftop restaurant, which we are still trying to lease out, but we'll be turning that into an event space later on this calendar year. And with that, happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you. Directors, any questions?
Yeah, it's a quick question. Thanks, Ari.
Yes, Charlie.
For the circus and the 7th anniversary, what are the times of those events?
Circus Bella is in the afternoon, so it'll be from noon to 5, and there's multiple performances happening. And then for the anniversary party, it's from 12 to 5.
Okay, and then one last one. Swing in the Sky, is that happening again tonight?
I wish it was, but no, I don't think it's happening again tonight.
Okay, I thought it was... I heard from my friends in the swing community that they were
I'll
there
be sure to ping you next time. Let's get out there, Charlie.
Okay.
Great discipline.
Cut a rug.
Yeah. Was that a request to bring back another swing?
I think it's a challenge.
Yeah.
I thought that was a competition request.
Yeah, exactly.
Directors, any other questions? Ari, thank you very much for the update. I really appreciate the asset management piece. We've spent and invested a lot. We need to maintain it.
It's a lot of work, and we take a lot of pride in it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any public comment?
I will check for public comment in the room, although I don't know that any members of the public are in the room with us. We do have a member online. We'll go ahead and let them in. Caller, please follow the prompts from WebEx, and you'll be allowed in to provide your comment.
Good morning, directors. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I just want to share some breaking news on a cap and trade. I just got out of the High Speed Rail Authority Finance and Audit Committee meeting, and they are reporting that the annual option revenues are right now dropping from $1 billion to approximately $750 million. And they are expecting this to be further affected by the closures of the two refineries. Because if these refineries close, they're expecting revenues to drop by an additional 10%. And that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LeBrun. That concludes the members of the public that wanted to comment on that item. Shall we call the next? All right. Item 6, directors, is a Citizens Advisory Committee update, and we have our Vice Chair, Brian Shaw, with us this morning.
Good morning, Chair G and directors. Brian Shaw, Vice Chair of the TJPA Citizens Advisory Committee, reporting on our July meeting that took place this past Tuesday. We had a quorum of CSC members present. We heard an update on Senate Bill 63 and learned the measure is intended to fund transit operations only, and is unlikely to help with portal funding. Cap and trade funding continues to be pursued. A CAC member was pleased to hear about more bike share stations coming to the transit center. We heard an overview and update on the TJPA's disadvantaged business enterprise and small business enterprise program. A CAC member suggested hearing more about the program's successes. We heard an update on the portal project. You'll hear more about that later this morning. A CAC member asked why the TrainBox platform extension was valued engineered out of the project. Staff said previous work assumed full double consists for high-speed rail, but there is enough room for all but one car to be on the platform, which has been approved by High-Speed Rail and the Federal Railroad Administration. We also heard that Link 21 will use standard gauge tracks, which allows the Transit Center's train box to be used for future rail service under the bay. A CAC member asked if the Pennsylvania Avenue tunnel and delaying installation of vertical connections for high-speed rail will impact Caltrain when it's operating in the Transit Center. Staff said until high-speed rail arrival is more defined, any potential disruption is unknown but likely. However, only the center platform is planned to be used by high-speed rail and would be impacted. That concludes my report.
Very good question. Thank you for being here today.
Sure.
Directors, any questions? Any public comment?
All right, we'll check for public comment. We do have a member of the public wishing to comment on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Go ahead and let the caller in. Good morning, Mr. LeBrun, again.
Okay, great. So very quick comment on the train box extension. I appreciate the FRA's, cooperation on the issue. But if you do go ahead, well, first of all, you will be the only high-speed rail system in the world that does not allow for double-length consists. And if you look at the business plan for Brightline West, they are going to start with single length, but that obviously as soon as the ridership starts picking up, they are going to go to double-length consists, and they are currently designing their platforms accordingly between LA and Las Vegas. And the last thing I really want to bring to your attention, if you think looking forward about Link 21 and crossing the bay, if you are limiting the length of the train to single length consists, you are effectively halving the capacity of the new Trans Bay Tunnel. And I really wish people would start thinking about this moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LeBrun. Directors, that concludes members of the public that wanted to comment on that item.
Thank you. Let's continue.
All right. Next item is item 7, public comment, which is an opportunity for members of the public to address the authority on matters that are not on today's calendar but within the jurisdiction of the agency. And we do not have any members of the public indicating they wish to comment on this item. So we can go ahead and move into your consent calendar.
Let's go.
All right. Where all matters are considered to be routine will be acted upon by single vote. There will be no separate discussion of the items unless a member of the board or the public so requests, in which event the matter should be removed would be removed from the consent calendar and considered separately. Directors, I have not received any indication that a member of the board or the public wishes to have any items considered separately. We will reconfirm that there is no public comment, which there is not. So your items are 8.1, approving the minutes of the June 12th, 2025 meeting. Item 8.2, authorizing the executive director to execute a 7th amendment to the lease agreement with Fitness SF Trans Bay for commercial retail space on the second floor of the Transit Center. Authorizing item 8.3 is authorizing the executive director to execute a 5th amendment to the lease agreement with Vanga Empanadas for commercial retail space on the first floor of the Transit Center. And item 8.4 is authorizing the executive director to execute amendment number 2 to the communications and outreach services agreement with Civic Edge Consulting, exercising an option to extend the contract by 1 3-year additional term to July 12, 2028, increasing the compensation under the agreement by $150,000 for a revised not to exceed amount of $585,000 for the approved term of the agreement, and adjusting the contractor's hourly rates. And again, there still is no interest in providing comment online.
Very good. Thank you. Directors, item for action. Is there a motion to approve consent?
Motion to approve consent.
Second. Thank you, Vice Chair. Motion by Director Andrzejczyk, second by Vice Chair Mandelman. Roll call vote, please.
Thank you. Director Andrzejczyk?
Yes.
Andrzejczyk, aye. Director Kirschbaum?
Aye.
Kirschbaum, aye. Director Lavery?
Aye.
Lavery, aye. Vice Chair Mandelman?
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. And Chair G?
Yes.
The ayes well. That is 5 ayes, and the consent calendar is approved. Moving to your regular calendar, item 9 is approving the anticipated disadvantaged business enterprise participation level of 4.03% for federal fiscal years 2025, to 26 through 2027 to 28 and an agency small business enterprise goal of 3.7%. And we have Anise Acevedo, our procurement and contract compliance manager, as well as the DBSB liaison officer to present the item.
Good morning, Chair G, directors. Anise Acevedo, TJPA's procurement and contract compliance manager and DBE SBE liaison officer. I don't have any slides for you today, and I am hoping to make this nice and brief for you all. The item before you is for approval of our anticipated disadvantaged business enterprise participation level goal for federal fiscal years 2025 through 2028 of 4.03%, and then an agency small business enterprise goal of 3.7%. After board approval today, we will submit this to the FTA for review and approval before August 1. There have been no changes to what was presented to you in June, and during the 30-day public comment period, we did not receive any comments. So this concludes my remarks, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
That was a very efficient report.
Not like last month.
Well, it just challenged our math skills, that's all.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Directors, any questions? Not seeing any public comment.
We'll go ahead and double-check for public comment. Seeing no members of the public wishing to comment on the item. It's ready for your...
Very good. Directors, this is item for action. What would you like to do? Director Kirschbaum?
I will move.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Director Lavery? Roll call vote, please.
All right. Thank you. With that, Director Andrzejczak.
Aye.
Andrzejczak, aye. Director Kirschbaum?
Aye.
Kirschbaum, aye. Director Lavery?
Aye.
Lavery, aye. Vice Chair Mandelman?
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. And Chair G?
Yes.
G, aye as well. It's five ayes, and item 9 is approved. And happy birthday, Anise.
Happy birthday.
Thank you for my birthday present.
Our next item, please.
All right, directors. Item 10 is authorizing the executive director to execute amendments to the professional services agreements for legal services with the bench of law firms providing services in their respective practice areas on an as-needed basis to extend the term of the agreements by 2 years and make certain clarifying edits regarding compensation without changing the scope of services or agreed upon rates. And directors, wearing my hat as chief of staff now. This item is before you today to exercise the option that was contemplated in 2020 agreements, approved agreements with the firm Shute, Mahaly & Weinberger, Rennie Public Law Group, Nixon Peabody, and Thompson Coburn, who would continue to assist us to deliver the TransBay program in their respective areas of expertise. And we'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Directors, any questions? Not seeing any public comment.
All right, we'll double check for public comment. Albert's going to get trained real soon. Thank you, Albert. No public comment.
Okay, directors, item for action.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Director Lavery.
Second.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Roll call vote, please.
Thank you. With that, Director Andrzejczak.
Aye.
Andrzejczak, aye. Director Kirschbaum.
Aye.
Kirschbaum, aye. Director Lavery.
Aye.
Lavery, aye. Vice Chair Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. And Chair G.
Yes.
G, aye as well. Thank you very much. Item 10 is approved. We'll go ahead and move into item 11, the portal update. And Alfonso Rodriguez, the portal project director, will present the item.
Yeah, okay. Well, good morning, Chair G, directors. Today's portal update will focus on our updated cost estimate. And I'll go in a little bit of detail on how it was derived and its impacts on our overall funding plan to secure a Federal Transit Administration capital investment grant, which will unlock approximately 41% of our overall project funding. I'll also cover our activities as we progress durable work while we continue to seek and secure our full local share and also focus on further risk mitigation. I'd like to point out that the staff report that accompanied this item is a starting point for our monthly project reporting and will soon include more measured and predictive cost and performance data along with key indicators in our newly generated from our newly launched project management information system. And it'll also include our outreach activities during the reporting period. All right, I'm gonna just keep going, huh? Yeah, all right. So let's get to the cost update. I hope you have those slides in front. Oh, here we go. It's back on the screen. time. So I think you've seen these before. I've reported several times before this board. These five factors have allowed us to reduce the cost estimate from about $8.3 billion to about $7.6 billion. That represents a capital cost reduction, fully burdened, including contingencies with escalation, of about a reduction of about $683 million. No small amount. That allows us to reduce the amount of local share that we need to seek by that same amount. We were able to accomplish this by working on and taking into the estimate the results of our secondary mitigation, the value engineering scope items, and I'm going to cover those in a moment. Actualizing escalation, the first 2 years of our program, we assumed a certain escalation. We were able to look backwards and actually take into account what actually occurred, and it was quite a reduction. There are some schedule adjustments, though, since the board adopted its baseline budget in August of 2023. Now, that added escalation back in the program, and that's something we need to focus on going forward, is to keep, you know, try to manage our schedule and stay on track as best as we can. We made some adjustments on our real estate valuation, and then, of course, I'll talk a little bit about some of the risk management work that allowed us to run a new quantitative risk assessment and reduce our own overall contingency. I'm not going to spend too much time on these items because you have seen these before, but these four scope items allowed us to reduce our estimate by about $214 million alone. And you heard about some of them already. The train box extension, I'd like to point out to this board that, you know, this program will allow a double consist high-speed vehicle train set to berth at its platform. You know, there will be a couple of vehicles hanging off the platform, but, you know, high-speed rail will know this. They've already adopted it. I mean, there's 8 cars or 16 cars in a double consist train set. So those last couple of cars will have to either not sell tickets for that station or make an operational adjustment. But we'll be able to berth a full double consist vehicle train set once high-speed rail believes they need to run a double consist along the alignment. We've talked about vertical circulation before. That'll be added when high-speed rail is on the peninsula and along the alignment. And then, of course, we did make that decision to eliminate California High-Speed Rail stop at 4th and Townsend. But anyway, these did lead to a significant reduction in our overall cost estimate. I did mention that the new estimate takes into account a new target ready-for-service date. When this board adopted the baseline budget in August of 2023, we indicated that we had a revenue service date forecast of the summer of 2032. Right now, with this schedule update, we're now targeting the fall of 2035. And the estimate includes the escalation associated with all the construction activity that leads us to that service date. The actualization is shown on the table below, and it includes what we did for the first fiscal years of the program that was submitted to the FTA back in the summer of 23. We had assumed 6% escalation in that first fiscal year and 5% following that. The reasons why is that the years preceding 2023 showed dramatic construction escalation. I mean, it was still on a climb, but we did engage an economist and looked at other data that told us it was going to flatten out. Still, we weren't certain. So we took this route where we assumed a 6% and a 5% the following year, and then a flat 3.5% for the remainder of the program. And this was in consultation with the FTA, and it was accepted by them. Well, the good news is now that we've been able to look back at those first 2 years, it was essentially flat. So we were able to actualize the escalation in our forecast and take that into account. And it, of course, allowed us to reduce our estimate. There was other design that progressed in the last couple of years that allowed us to adjust our overall program. And right away, I want to point out that $320 million that we included in our FTA-submitted budget was a right-away estimate pretty much at the peak of our market. And since then, of course, we all know what happened with real estate prices. The forecast that we're now carrying assumes what we believe the value of the right-of-way that we need to acquire, and not just today, and during the period in which we will conduct our right-of-way acquisition. So this is a go-forward forecast in the time frame of the program. Contingencies, I mentioned before, when we've done some really good risk mitigation work so far, we plan to do far more. But because of that, we simulated what FTA does in what they call a quantitative risk assessment. And we looked at our entire risk register as it stands today. We reevaluated it. And the results generated a recommended level of contingency that allowed us to reduce our contingency by a little over $100 million. Now, it is still a sizable amount because we have quite a bit of design work yet to complete, and our risk register still is rather robust. That is our goal as a project delivery team, is to continue with advanced design and with a focus of de-risking our program that allows us to, perhaps right before we request our grant, submit an estimate that's more reflective of reality and an estimate that a contingency that we believe we need to carry through construction. So our work still lies ahead, but the good work we've done so far allowed us to reduce our overall contingency. Now, how does this play into our overall funding plan? Well, it allowed us to reduce that which we still need to identify and seek to complete our local share by about $683 million. So right now we're looking at another $713 that we need to secure to complete our funding plan and request a grant. And in the meanwhile, while we continue to do that, we'll continue to advance durable work, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Represented in the funding chart show our other identified funding sources for the program. A little bit about our cost performance. Shown on the table are our professional services contracts, the authorizations that we've issued so far. With the newly adopted budget, new NTPs are being released as we speak, so we'll update this table. I do want to point out that, of course, with the board's adopted budget last month, these contracts are fully funded for this fiscal year. I do want to point out our predicted for next fiscal year right-of-way professional services are, in fact, fully funded. This was information that we received after posting, so apologize for that discrepancy. All right, I've got a couple of pages on risk. I'll go through those quickly, but these represent those risks that are on our risk register. We have allocated contingency for these. Our focus in the next couple of months, if not years, will be to mitigate these risks, and they have to do with continued delays in our schedule. Again, I mentioned that that's going to be our foe. If we're not able to progress our construction contracts per current schedule, escalation will creep in and move our estimate in the other direction. Noise and vibration. We've done some very good work already to conduct studies along the alignment and Caltrain's new vehicle, but we have more work to do. And the actual mitigation for noise and vibration within the tunnel will be performed by the civil and tunnel contractor. So once we award that contract and progress that work, we'll be able to, I hope, retire this risk. The next one is always a risk with major construction contracts. We're using progressive design build. There are certain advantages, definite advantages to our program for an integrated project delivery approach. However, if we're not able to reach an agreement on the construction cost, then, of course, we'll have to take an off-ramp option, and that will have impact to our overall schedule. How do you mitigate this? Well, you make sure that you keep visibility on cost estimate as that design has progressed and maintain a partnership throughout to minimize surprises. There are other ways to do that, but this is going to stay on our risk register, and I'm going to say until we are able to reach mutual agreement on a construction cost. Talked a little bit more about further delays and inability to access materials due to overheated markets. All right, so this concludes my presentation with the schedule slide. We did launch our project management information system. There are some other modules that we will continue to develop. We're looking forward to having our PMIS start giving us data, which will include some predictive reporting. I'll include that in our monthly report once we start obtaining that. We are progressing, as Adam pointed out, some of the utility relocation design. A boundary survey is underway or ready to launch that'll help us complete our track alignment. Again, it allows us to progress our design. The procurements, though, listed below, though, are those that we just need to continue to ensure that we can fund before we release those RFPs. I did note there on 40CT, and this board is well aware that we are ready to release an RFP. We still have a little bit more work to do before that RFP can be released. So right now we're forecasting the time frame of end of August, beginning of September for that release. But I want to assure you that we're working diligently to get that thing tidied up and out the door. This concludes my presentation. I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Alfonso, thank you very much. I think it's the first time I've ever seen a number go down from a budget. Hopefully we can continue or maintain that. So thank you and the entire team for all the hard work. And hopefully that saying time is money doesn't move that number back up. So, but we have a lot of outside factors contributing to things that we can't control about when money shows up. Directors, questions? Director Kirschbaum?
I'm appreciative of the value engineering, which I think is the most tangible cost savings to point to, and especially eliminating the high-speed rail stop at 4th and Townsend, which did not make a lot of sense. I know it's a little bit of a chicken and egg, because if we have a high number, it's harder to fund. But is funding itself is a schedule risk, correct?
That's right, it is.
And how is that reflected in the risk registry? Are there dollars attached to that?
There are dollars attached to that. Much like those other schedule-laden risks, they are dollarized. It's part of the quantitative risk assessment approach that uses a probability of impact and the cost of that impact should it occur. And I will admit, you know, a scheduled delay due to funding is not an easy one to attach a dollar value to, but it is part of our assessment, and it is carried in our contingency.
And how many years of delay are you funded for?
I can get back to you on that, because like I said, it is one of those discrete risks that are require quite a bit of conversation, so let me report back to you on that.
Thank you.
To give you a little concrete sense there, the master schedule and budget targets a full funding grant agreement in July of 2027. That, of course, requires identification of all the remaining match that has to come from a number of sources. They all have to align to make that work. Additional delays beyond that date are subject to escalation. Escalation is, of course, subject to the market. The Federal Transit Administration's project management oversight consultant working with us on this has assumed an annual escalation rate of 3.5%. As you heard, we have not experienced that over the last 2 years, which is to the benefit of the price. But if we return to that more standard level of escalation, that's hundreds of millions of dollars annually in cost escalation alone. So what you'll hear us speak to is an indicative cost. That indicative cost is where we see it trending today. But we will not be asking you to take a formal position on a new master budget or schedule until we are required to do so to begin negotiating a full funding grant agreement. So as the chair mentioned, it is a dynamic situation based on the economy, the price of labor and materials, our progress, our ability to identify funds. There are a number of things that can impact that, and we will report when there are large changes to that, in this case to the positive. But if a delay would be in the opposite direction.
Vice Chair Mandelman?
We've talked about this stuff before, but I have a leaky brain and so forget things easily. But for these sort of remaining, I mean, it's sort of optimistic to say that the way we're thinking or describing this plan to state funding assumes like a source, which right that now that would be cap and trade for the programs that we would be trying to get funding from, right? And can you just sort of catch us up on where that conversation is post-budget?
On cap and trade in particular, or on all of our remaining sources?
Well, really everything. But so, yeah. I mean, on the state, I mean, there's a couple of potential state funding sources, and we're saying a certain amount is going to, we're anticipating, we hope, will come from that. That can't happen without some state source of funding, which we're assuming is cap and trade for those programs. Just so that set of uncertainties, if you could talk a little bit about how that environment may be different now than it was in January. And then there's this additional gap of $713 million of something else. And if you could refresh us on how we're thinking about the something else.
Yeah, big picture, as you see in the pie chart on slide 7 of the presentation, we're approaching three quarters funded with the full funding grant agreement assumed through the capital investment grant and the other budgeted committed previous expenditure and value engineering sources. The planned state is the largest remainder of the about $2 billion remaining gap at $1.053 billion. That is a specific number because it's reflective of two things that have been written and committed to in paper only without a backing of a funding source for many, many years now. One of which is a capital contribution from the California High-Speed Rail Authority for $550 million. That's been in four of their last business plans. But it will require cap and trade extension and agreement that the legislature is willing to start investing in the two population centers, the LA Basin and the San Francisco Bay Area, beyond their initial operating segment in the Central Valley. With the planned discussion as part of an August trailer bill, everything we're hearing, and they're still subject to much negotiation over the next 2 months, is that the goal is to get to a legislative decision in August to a 2045, and some would even push for 2050, but 2045 is the number most often quoted. So if an extension of 20 years from today and 15 years beyond its sunset in 2030, that would provide a source of funds that is averaged, though you heard Mr. LeBrun mention that their proceeds are down in the last auction. They're very variable to the market. They've averaged about $4 billion per annum, and about 25% of that has gone to high-speed rail. Should it be extended until 2045, that would give the ability for the state, the Department of Transportation, to issue multi-year awards, as they've done for other major capital projects like ours, Caltrain Electrification, BART Core Capacity, and elsewhere. It would open the door to start negotiating the honoring of that longtime California high-speed rail commitment. The second one is a competitive source funded by cap and trade called the Transit Intercity Regional Capital Program. The Metropolitan Transportation Commission, as you've heard us previously report, has put the portal as a tier one priority in their major project advancement policy and has endorsed the project for $500 million in competitive TRSIP grants. TRSIP gets 9 or 10%, I think it's 10% of all cap and trade proceeds. It's a competitive application across the state. Once reauthorized, it also gives them a chance to do multi-year awards. So $500 million for us, we need to match the federal funds to initiate the full funding grant agreement and start construction. We don't need every dollar on day one. We have about 5 years of planned construction and a year of testing and commissioning, and we're a few years out to complete design and permits and other third-party agreements. So we could do that over a period of time. If it's pushed too far into the future, we'd have to incur financing costs to bring that forward, which drives that up. But that is the $1.053 billion slice there. The $365 million is three different sources: community facilities district, net tax increments, and I was just looking at this other day. These are three sources that we have line of sight for but don't yet have approval of and are contingent upon some additional discretionary action, but are not statewide. The third is what we've submitted for a federal state partnership grant under the Federal Transit Administration. The remainder of the 713 is just to be planned. There are a number of competitive sources out there, but we don't yet have a line of sight that we have confidence in on those funds yet. That number has shrunk with our lower cost estimate, but we need to put together a plan of action to get that to a full funding grant agreement.
That number also grows, right? I mean, that's the number that...
That's the number that will grow if we are delayed.
That's the what's left.
Correct.
How do we feel? I mean, that seems like, I don't know, $1 billion seems like a lot of money. So,
out of $7.5 billion, it's 10% of our costs. So it is not an insignificant dollar amount, but it starts getting us to the end. And as we've reported in the past, these projects can be very difficult to get initiated and can get very difficult to get to that near final. The last dollar in is usually your easiest dollar to get you over the hump into final construction. Getting from 70% to 80% is getting to that momentum, and that's sort of the path we're in now. With the cap and trade reauthorization discussion and this project being 30% designed, fully environmentally cleared, nearly shovel ready, and recommended as a project of national and state significance and regional prioritization, it is well primed for that initial tranche of multiple year awards. So it's going to be a big topic up in Sacramento, and we want to be a part of that strategy with our Bay Area delegation.
Okay, thank you.
Adam, I just want to follow up the vice chair's question. What can the board do to help get that last 10%? I mean, it is the hardest piece sometimes, and I don't want to be too optimistic, but the board can lean in, depending on how you want us to do it, to either our Bay Area delegation, go with you. What can we do to help?
I love these kinds of questions. And so the first one is getting us to where we only have 10% or possibly even ideally less, and that is making sure that the portal remains one of the Bay Area's top priorities for transit capital in the cap and trade discussions. So you heard me say earlier the mayoral administration wants to make sure our buses and our trains continue to operate and that we have funding for our fiscal cliff. I want to make sure that there is funding for affordable housing through cap and trade, but that this project is the capital priority. It is the most ready to go top priority for the city and county and for this agency. So ensuring that we get a significant investment there. There is a discussion that I referenced of many agencies that are providing infrastructure for the future arrival of high-speed rail, what we call joint benefit projects. This is the entirety of Caltrain electrification, where high-speed rail will use that alignment, but it's also improvements such as the portal or the advancement of Diridon or other things along that alignment. As the authority gets funding to complete the initial operating segment and start doing the geotechnical engineering to get into those population centers, we want to make sure that the Bay Area is aligned to provide that benefit up front, which we know Caltrain could be the initial operator for, and then we would be putting passengers into electrified service in the near term and making sure we're ready for that eventual arrival of high-speed rail. So to specifically answer your question, one is work with our Bay Area delegation to underscore the importance of the portal in Sacramento as part of these discussions. This is a live conversation over the next really 2 months as we hear it, to try to get to that billion-dollar-plus commitment. If there is an appetite to extend cap and trade to a longer horizon, and there is some discussion of that, that would increase the pot of available funds to do that. On the remainder is going to be subject to more competitive sources. So we've applied to many Federal Transit and Federal Rail Administration sources. We're hoping to exercise our CRISI grant for track and systems design this late summer, early fall. But we have an active federal-state partnership grant. There's active discussions in Washington about the next surface transportation bill that would populate some of those competitive sources. So there's a number of different ways to kind of slice and dice the remainder here, and appreciate your continued advocacy and your letters of support and your conversations with our state and federal delegates to kind of get this over the finish line.
If I may, Adam, I think that's great, but I think if Townsend, Lily, and the entire team could put a one-page marketing piece together for us, I think that would be great, because taking what you just said and put it into five bullet points. There's a here,
yeah,
following up our federal lobbyists from last month. It's almost shovel-ready. It's cleared, environmentally cleared. We're ready to go to create jobs here in San Francisco and the Bay region. That's how we need to present this to our delegation and to labor and to all of our transit partners. We're ready. We just need the extra last piece or a commitment over the next 5 years for that last piece, and then we can figure it out. And so that's what we really need, is a one-pager, simple bullets, and then we can talk to our communities, our business partners, our labor partners, and make this happen. Director Kirschbaum.
Yeah, well, I agree, and Adam and his team have provided that to me, so that when I'm up advocating for operating funding, I can also represent the city's capital priorities. And likewise, when the TJPA is up, they're wearing their city's and Bay Area Transit operating hat as well as this larger capital hat. So I think it is very important that we have integrated talking points.
Thank you, Director. If the entire board, each board member can have that, great.
We do have the one, many variations of the one pager. We'll make sure you have access to it. And Lily's been doing a great job working with our comms team and our project team on keeping those up to date. And we'll make sure that those are in your inboxes. We are also working with the region on those joint benefit projects on a similar accessible project fact sheet, so we can make sure that we are coordinated as a region.
Very good. Thank you. Director Andrzejczyk.
Thank you to my colleagues for the great questions. Vice Chair Mandelman, I am a little newer, so the history lesson that Adam gave us was very good. The right-of-way acquisitions, can you remind me what the sort of overall schedule for that is? Because I definitely understand the value engineering or the, you know, sort of schedule, the cost reduction in that part, but that will not be around forever. So just wondering, you know, what the overall schedule is for that period.
Yeah, there are five total tranches, I believe, of right-of-way, and we've prioritized them through a couple of screening criteria. One, those that we will need early in stage for construction, so points of entry or staging. Two, likely willing sellers that are not fully tenanted or older buildings. And then we will work our way towards the last set, which is really easements under existing property, where we want to keep those tenants in place. But we may have a tie back through their, you know, the edge of their parcel or something like it. The first tranche is five parcels, and I'm going to keep looking to Alfonso and the team if I say anything that's not exactly right, because there's a lot of numbers swirling in my leaky brain. But the first five parcels, we are doing the boundary survey. We've done environmental site assessments, and we are approaching the first appraisals this fall, and we hope to start negotiating terms with those five property owners this coming winter. We have regional bridge tolls, RM3 funds, for that acquisition. That has always been our use of those sources. And the MTC, the commission, has acted to give us authority for the first $100.7 million of that $325 million bridge toll allocation. We want to secure this for a number of reasons. One, we hear this from every one of our partners, that right-of-way acquisition is a driver of cost and schedule initially in any project like this. Two, we are in a market that is advantageous to purchase right now, and that may not last, will not last forever. It may not last very much longer. And three, we have some willing sellers that could be looking to exit the marketplace entirely. So we want to capitalize on those factors now while we continue to secure the funding to secure our schedule and start date. The following tranches will come at a later date, some of which have full tenancy and we don't want to disturb until we are at their front door with construction. So some of them will be more just in time, but we want to be as strategic and opportunistic as we can with the remainders.
And just my other comment would be, it is always nice to hear when there is a significant budget reduction, no matter how it happens. So thank you.
Very good. Any other questions, directors? Any questions? Just in the staff report, there's the discussion about cash flow and funding and program commitments and things like that. You know, fully funded, does that mean we have enough cash to pay our bills, or will we need a financial instrument because some of these are reimbursement and grants?
I'm going to invite our CFO to address the question, Chergy.
Good morning, directors. Fully funded is basically a combination of the funds that are already programmed and also budgeted. By programmed, I mean the funds that are allocated through the funding agencies but hasn't gone through their, you know, appropriated through funding agencies but hasn't gone through their allocation process with their committees or commissions, you know, like to allocate, for example, Prop L. We have like $300 million in a program, but every year we have to go back, you know, like to SFCTA and then go through the allocation process, get things, you know, like done by their, you know, like committee, and then, you know, the funds can come, you know, on a cash basis, but also it's not advanced. It's always, you know, like on a reimbursement basis. So when we say fully funded, it's just as far as, you know, it's programmed. And some of the fund sources, such as, you know, for example, CFD, old CFDs, they are already, you know, in-house and cash. And some of the upcoming CFDs are basically reimbursement basis, so we don't need, you know, to get the allocation. But some other fund sources are only programmed. So it's a combination of all different kinds.
Okay.
And that's one of actually my hardest, you know, part of my job is to always, you know, like do on a monthly basis because I run a monthly, you know, cash flow to make sure that, you know, we have enough cash to pay our, you know, invoices.
And I appreciate that very much. I mean, part of the challenge is that pie chart with the different colors, and even there will be even more colors if we, when we get fully funded. And so as the report, staff report matures, I want to make sure we are looking ahead with on a cash basis, because when, from my perspective, whether it be contractors or service providers or providing service, we need to pay them for the services they perform on a timely basis. So.
And definitely one of the items that we have to be looking into when we get closer, you know, to fully funded grant agreement is that some sort of, you know, financing mechanism for bringing, you know, like the cash in, because most of our fund sources and grants are reimbursement based or not advanced, you know, like money. So that would be also, you know, like something else to look into. And then, you know, we already factored the cost for financing into our, you know, total pie chart as a, you know, project cost. It's already, you know, embedded in the project cost. But when we get closer, based on the market, we know how much actually it will be.
I appreciate that, Shane, because when we do start construction, and I want to say that, when we do start construction, we'll need to probably finance some of that or have a line of credit for reimbursement, because it'll take 30 to 60 days to have the funds come back to us.
Exactly.
So thank you. You know, I'll look forward to that part of the report being matured so that we can see what our cash flow needs will be. Thank you. In public comment, this is just an information item.
It is just an information item. You do have a member of the public online that would like to provide comments.
Thank you, Chair. So very briefly, I would like to circle back to the earlier comment about somehow accommodating a double length consist, even though half of the second consist, which by the way, that's four rail cars, and not two, is hanging off the end of the platform. The root cause of this issue is that we are approaching the transit center at 90 degrees from 2nd Street. This is unheard anywhere else in the world. But when we do that, we are shortening the length of the platforms by close to 700 feet. That's the root cause of the problem. And they try to compensate for that issue with this train box extension. That alignment was mandated because initially they wanted to have three tracks to approach the transit center. That three track requirement was eliminated years ago. We're down to two tracks. What that does is to give us an opportunity of pivoting from this massive $8 billion two-track tunnel to two small one-track tunnels, one under MENA and one under Natoma. At that point, we will have restored the full capacity of the transit center, which is over 1,500 feet. But what it will also allow us to do is to substantially reduce the costs of building this tunnel and also delivering it much faster and potentially without any federal funding. And I'm gonna close off here because I'm not seeing a clock and I don't know if my time ran out. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LeBrun. That concludes members of the public that wanted to comment under that item. As you mentioned, it is just an information item, so we can go ahead and call your next item.
Alfonso, thank you for the report. Shima, thank you. Adam.
All right. All right, directors. Item 12 is election of the chair and vice chair pursuant to the TJPA Joint Powers Agreement. And directors, I am looking for a nomination. Who?
Vice Chair Mandelman.
Well, Chair G, if you're willing to, we'd like to stick you with this responsibility for another term.
I'm not sure I'd like the way you presented that
question. We are fortunate in having had Chair G chairing this body and leading us through a number of years of gradual progress toward this goal. It's gradual but steady progress toward the goal we all share, and I have been grateful for that, and I would hope that you would be willing to serve for another term, and so I would like to nominate Jeff G. to continue as chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Madman. We have a nomination of Chair G. to be Chair G. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Are there any others? Seeing none. And on your tenure, I think, 10 years with us here?
In December, it'll be okay. 10 years. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm thinking the same thing.
All right. And Chair D, do you accept the nomination?
I'm not sure I like being stuck with us, but yes, I will be happy to serve one more term.
Thank you.
All right. All right. With that, we'll check for public comment. I'm not seeing any hands raised online. I know that there are no members of the public in the room. So with that, on motion to elect Chair G as continuing as chair. With a first and a second, Director Andrzejczak.
Aye.
Andrzejczak, aye. Director Kirschbaum.
Aye.
Kirschbaum, aye. Director Lavery.
Aye.
Lavery, aye. Vice Chair Mandelman.
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. And Chair G.
Yes.
All right. Unanimous. Five ayes. Chair G, thank you for remaining Chair G.
And thank board, you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the support and honored to serve again.
Thank you.
All right. We are now taking nominations for Vice Chair.
May I use your piece of paper, Vice Chair? I'd like to nominate Vice Chair Mandelman to continue to serve as Vice Chair for another term, if he so accepts.
Okay. We have second. All right. We have a nomination and a second. And do we have any others?
I'd like to nominate.
And do you accept?
I do.
Okay. All right. With that, I'll motion to elect Vice Chair Mandelman as continuing as Vice Chair. Director, let's check for public comment. I do not see any hands raised. All right. Director Andrzejczak?
Aye.
Andrzejczak, aye. Director Kirschbaum?
Aye.
Kirschbaum, aye. Director Lavery?
Aye.
Lavery, aye. Vice Chair Mandelman?
Aye.
Mandelman, aye. And Chair G?
Yes.
Chair G, aye as well. Five ayes. Unanimous. Vice Chair Mandelman will remain Vice Chair. Congratulations to all.
Best traditions of the union.
Yeah.
Thank you, and that concludes the business before you today.
Again, board, thank you for your time today. The gift of time and the gift of your August today is released. And have a great summer, and we'll see you in September. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.